How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 240 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz, and unfortunately, if you saw the news on Twitter, which I announced on Wednesday, it's the last time I'm going to be saying that. This is my last episode of Locked On Thunder, which is unfortunate for me to say. I didn't write anything out for me to read. I'm just winging it right now. So this is the final episode of Locked On Thunder just for me. Locked On Thunder is still going to live on after me. David is going to go get a new host. And I just wanted to take this intro to just thank David Locke for the opportunity he gave me to host this show. I've been doing it since June of 2016. Working for David is just awesome. Like, David is an amazing person. He's a brilliant guy. He's incredible at his job. Everybody knows that. And everybody sees the on-air personality of David. But he's such a good person and such a... He's given so many people all these opportunities to do these sorts of things that I'm doing right now. He couldn't be easier to work for. He really couldn't. He couldn't be more generous. And I'm really excited that David was able to give me the privilege. But it was time to move on. And I'm excited about things to come. This is not going to be it for me in podcasting. This is not going to be it for me. I'm still covering the Thunder. I'm still working at the Norman Transcript. This is not going to be it for me in any sort of social capacity or anything like that. I'm still going to be around covering the Thunder, tweeting about the Thunder, writing about the Thunder, that kind of stuff. And there's podcast stuff to come. So you can follow me on Twitter for that, at Fred Katz, if you want to see what's up next. You can still check out my writing, all that kind of stuff. Today, for the final episode, I had on Michael Pina from Vice Sports, who I've had on a few times before. Mike and I really, we talked about the NBA 2K ratings coming out and Stephen Curry and Russell Westbrook tying for the top point guard rating, the crazy controversy that followed that. And then we talked about the over-under numbers that Vegas came out with and some of our favorite ones, our least favorite ones, the ones we don't want to touch, the ones that we'd be most excited to bet on if we were betting, of course, because we can't, because now we cover the league. It would be fun to bet on them, but unfortunately we can't ethically do that. And a lot of other stuff. So I thought this was a good, fun podcast, a good one to go out on. Thank you to all the listeners. Thank you for you guys. I never thought I would get as many listeners on this thing as I actually end up getting. It's amazing how dedicated the Thunder fan base is. Like, it's crazy. Like, what a passionate fan base it is. And I grew up around passionate fan bases. You know, I'm a Yankees fan. I'm a Jets fan. I grew up in New York around Knicks fans. Like, I get what it's like to be around a passionate fan base, and the Thunder fan base is about as passionate as they come, and it shows with the way that people just listen to the most random episodes that I throw up, and I don't think anyone is going to listen to them, you know, whether it's because it's just a post-game show of a game where the Thunder lost by 30, and I just am like, why would anybody listen to this if they're a Thunder fan? And why would anybody listen to this if they're not a Thunder fan? And then just thousands of people listen, or just like, these random episodes where there's just nothing going on in the middle of August and everybody's still listening. And it's amazing. And I'm just really excited that you guys were around to give me a platform to be able to do something like this, to be able to share my thoughts, to be able to talk, all that kind of stuff. So let's take a quick break and let's get to that conversation with Michael and let's start the final episode, or at least my final episode of Locked On Thunder.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, so I'm here with Michael Pina, Vice Sports, third, fourth, fifth time guest. I don't know. How many times have you been on?
I believe this is my third.
Third time. What a guy. I don't know why I always bring you on. I don't know why I bring you near me, but yet I keep gravitating towards you.
Well, I appreciate that, Fred.
You've got to be honored to be the final guest, though. That's a big deal.
I know. You just told me that right before we started recording, and pretty pumped. It's a career highlight for me.
You should be. That should be number one on your resume now.
First at the top of the list, buddy.
Of course. It should be the objective, honestly. After your objective on your resume should be being after being the final guest on Locked On Thunder, I would like to be the final guest on every podcast. It could be like a weird legacy you could leave in the basketball community.
That would be a weird legacy. That's a good way to put it.
So NBA 2K rankings are like, you know, squeaking out. And even if you don't care about video games, there's, you know, an uproar in the Thunder fan base. Such disrespect to the MVP, Russell Westbrook, who came in only tied for the highest ranking, the highest rating in the NBA point guards. Tied with Stephen Curry. Both those guys are 94s. How angry are you about Russell Westbrook being only tied for the best point guard in the NBA?
I kind of think Steph Curry is better than Russell Westbrook, so this isn't like a controversial thing for me. I don't really play 2K, although I think I might have to start because it dominates the conversation in the off season and seems like a fun thing to do. I feel like also in a video game atmosphere, Steph Curry would be pretty crazy. Like, I've never played 2K, but how many threes is he missing when he's open?
Yeah, video game Steph is unreal. There's nothing like video game Steph.
Yeah.
Although, back in the day, you know who the best was? If we're talking like 2K. Tim Thomas. You think I'm kidding?
I got a name for you.
Okay.
2K set, like, 07. I forget who was on the cover. It might have been Chris Paul when he was in New Orleans, I think. Josh Smith on the Atlanta Hawks is so savage in that video game, like unstoppable. just throwing that out there. That's the last time I was hardcore into 2K, like literally 10 years ago. And if you were the Atlanta Hawks, I couldn't play you because Josh Smith was unfair.
So when I was in high school, my buddies and I used to get together. We used to do 2K tournaments, and we would do one-minute quarters. We'd do round-robin one-minute quarters. And, you know, just winner stays on. And or actually, maybe it wasn't winner stays on. Maybe it was just like a true round-robin. Either way, not important. Totally irrelevant. I've gotten sidetracked already. Anyway, I would just play with whichever team Tim Thomas happened to be on that year. So maybe I'd be the Bucks, maybe I'd be the Clippers. Whatever team Tim Thomas was on, that was the team that I would play with. And Tim Thomas would take every single shot. And everyone knew that I would take every shot with Tim Thomas, but I had just mastered Tim Thomas's shooting form. And I would just drain with Tim Thomas every time. Everybody knew I was the Tim Thomas guy. So I got really excited. Whenever I would start associating Tim Thomas with like his avatar in the game. So I started to like really like Tim Thomas because I liked playing with him in the video game, which is similarly how I became a Clippers fan, because I liked playing with Eric Piatkowski and Kobe Bryant NBA courtside. And that was how I became a Clippers fan when I was like 9. So I have a weird video game history, and I'm really excited about that. And I will always associate Tim Thomas with being amazing in like NBA 2K, like 06 or whatever few years strength. Every year it was, because he always had that same form. Every year it was just like Tim Thomas, it just drained everything.
Did you ever get to play with him when he was on the Suns?
I don't think so. No, I don't think I made it to Tim Thomas Suns era. I think it was more Bucks than Clippers. It was definitely Clippers. Might be the Bucks too.
Tim Thomas is underrated in history.
Tim Thomas is pretty good.
Played on just about every team in the league, but yeah, a legend.
He was pretty good. Speaking of every team in the league, like my favorite time of the year was on Tuesday when Vegas released the first set of wins over unders for every team in the NBA. And for those who don't know, it's extremely simple. Vegas sets a line for how many wins they think a team is going to have. Usually that has a half a number there. And you can bet either you think they're going to win more, so you bet over, or you think they're going to win less, so they bet under. So the Atlanta Hawks over-under is 25.5. So you can bet over, they'll win more than 25.5 wins. Under, they'll have fewer than 25 and a half wins. And it is as simple as that. They release them for all 30 teams. It's really fun. It's really fun to debate over and discuss and figure out what you think are the best values and that kind of stuff. The Thunder came in the fourth best Western Conference team, 51 and a half. The Warriors were at 67 and a half. Houston's at 55 and a half. The Spurs are at 54 and a half. What do you think of that 51 and a half number for OKC, Mike?
I think it's pretty fair. I mean, if I was a gambling man, I would probably take the over. I'm pretty high on this team. The more I think about it, I think the last time I was on with you, I was a little negative just in reflecting on their lack of shooting and whatnot. And I think Patrick Patterson was either news just surgery or something related to that kind of dampened my mood on the team. But when I just look at their defensive potential and kind of how defense can carry from night to night, I think they'll be a very good team. And if Russell Westbrook and Paul George have are co-simpatico and get it together, that's just devastating on a nightly basis. So I would probably take the over.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a stay away for me. I picked them, so like I went on Dunked On and did the Thunder season preview with Nate, and before these lines came out, you know, a week and a half ago or so, and Nate asked me what my wins prediction was, and I said 52. So I was kind of right on line with what they have there. So I guess technically I would say, and if I had to choose one, I guess I would say take the over because I had them at 52, but I feel like they could go a little bit under on it. You know, they were a 47-win team last year, but they weren't really the quality of a 47-win team, which is something I've discussed a lot. Like, their clutch time numbers were crazy, and it wasn't just because Russ made all those insane shots. They were second in defensive efficiency during clutch time, which is games within 5 points with five or fewer minutes left. It's just, I think it would be, I could see a world in which they win 49 or something like that. You know, the Patterson is hurt going into the year, and they expect him to be back for training camp, but it's still an injury going into the year. And, well, you know, Russ and Paul George get off to a little bit of a slow start, and then they're stronger at the end because they kind of figure it out. And that's a line that I would probably stay away from. That being said, I think they're going to be really good. I think they're going to be really good. And if I had to choose, I would take the over. There are just other ones that I'm more confident in. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it's what did they win? 47 games last season?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I'm totally with you with the, it's really difficult sometimes when you look at the clutch, how teams performed when games were extremely tight, games that could have easily gone either way. I know Westbrook like single-handedly pulled a few games out of his ass last season. Now they add Paul George, so it's really difficult to kind of balance those two variables. But like looking around, like a team that really similar to the Thunder in that sense is the Boston Celtics, which they're my favorite team. And when I saw their over/under, it's just like kind of an absurd number to me. And it's I think that that's the easier bets going right now.
Yeah, 56 and a half for Boston. That was one of the ones that I was like, ooh, that could, I'm taking the under there. Like, you can, they could be the one seed. They could, like, solidly be the one seed in the East and still be the under.
They won 53 last season. And basically, the entire team is different. I mean, they added talent, but, like, I think their depth is shot. I think there's a lot of question marks with regards to their youth. And I don't want to, you know, hijack this Thunder, the last Lockdown Thunder with too much Celtics talk. But I'll just say that over-under, if we're talking just generally around the league, that was the one that probably surprised me the most.
What else? What else you like?
You know, another one that is a little high for me, the Sixers at 42 and a half. I don't really understand, to be honest. You know, this team had the worst offense in basketball last season. Joel Embiid's health is an obvious question mark. I don't think that JJ Redick is going to be the difference maker. Some people seem to believe. I mean, he's going to a team that, you know, doesn't have arguably the best playmaking point guard in basketball anymore, or the smartest, I should say. And I think, you know, Chris Paul in that system with the Clippers really made a lot of the opportunities that Redick had. And he'll have gravity and all that, but I don't think his impact will be there. It's just such a young team with Fultz and Simmons who have never played a game before. Amir Johnson, who they signed for $11 million, was basically shot last season and couldn't move. So I'm not high on this team at all, and I don't understand why people think they're going to be above 500.
That makes sense. I like Indiana over 31.5. I think Indiana is going to be better than people say they will. They're not going to be good. But I think they're going to be – I don't think they're going to be, like, in the class.
Oh, this is is interesting to me.
Do you disagree?
I do. Why do you feel that they're going to be better than expectations?
Well, I really like Miles Turner. I wouldn't at all be surprised if we saw a jump from Miles Turner. I think it's extremely possible that we end up seeing that. And I realize that he's best off with a really good point guard, which is something he doesn't have. Garen Collison's, like, fine. He's a below average starting point guard, and he's above average backup point guard. He's, you know, a fine guy to end up having in there. Corey Joseph's pretty good. I think defensively they could end up being pretty average, which is something that, you know, could end up propelling them past 31.5 wins. And I think Victor Oladipo is going to end up looking better than he did last year with the Thunder. I think he's gonna be a better player. I just thought last year was a poor fit next to Westbrook, where they just kind of crammed him in the corner and turned him into an off-ball corner three shooter offensively, and that was it. And if that's what – that's not what Indiana's going to do. He's going to be freer. He's going to be better. Now, I don't think he's going to become, like, a great player, but I think he's going to be better. I think he's going to be more comfortable, and I think he's going to look better. And I think those improvements, I think, if everybody stays stagnant to what they were last year, then yeah, they're a 31 team. But I think they're going to be more like a 35-win team. And if that would comfortably clear their over-under. I don't even think they're going to be a playoff team, unless the East is just so bad that 35 gets you in. But I think they're going to be like a 35-36-win team. So not good, but I think those improvements are going to help them just become, like, not, you know, one of the five or six worst teams in the league.
Yeah, I think playing style is a huge deal with the Pacers. What type of lineups they're going to deploy? Are they going to have two bigs? Al Jefferson's still there. I know they got rid of some other guys. Monte Ellis is no longer around. The spacing should be better around Turner. I wrote a thing about Victor Oladipo a few weeks ago, and I think their entire season kind of hinges on how he reacts to being the primary ball handler, which he will be, besides Lance Stevenson, which, I mean, that's another reason why I'm not too high on the Pacers. But yeah, you made a good point about, I really didn't like Oladipo's fit last year. I don't think too many players that age could have come into that situation next to Westbrook and kind of the just like unstoppable motivation that he had last season in the first post Kevin Durant season, where he was basically locked into doing everything himself and there really wasn't much Oladipo could do. And but I mean, I'm really curious, just real quick, Oladipo's point guard skills, it looks like that's kind of where they're going to have him on the floor. I think they're going to play Collison off ball more so than on it. So what are your thoughts on his playmaking ability next
below
season?
It's below average. Mm-hmm. I think it's at best below average. But the Thunder barely used him in that. I mean, he looked like a better playmaker in Orlando when they would let him run pick and rolls. They would let him take the ball to the top of the key and make some plays. He never gets to the free throw line. He doesn't really like to get all the way to the rim. He kind of, whenever he penetrates, he'll pull up at 12 feet or before getting all the way to the rim, which I think is both a problem in terms of getting to the line, in terms of getting efficient shots, but also in terms of creating, because you have to be able to get to the rim in order to draw in the defense and be able to kick out and dump off and that kind of stuff too. So I do think that's a problem in his game. Maybe it's a fixable one. Maybe it's not a fixable one because it's something that he's never really done. Maybe it's just something that he's just so uncomfortable doing that he just can't get it into his head to be able to do it at a high level. So maybe it's something that won't change. I'm willing to believe that's something that won't change, and I'm willing to believe that maybe he'll always be a below-average creator, but there are still other guys there who can, at the very least, like, competently bring you up to, like, the number 19. Like, I think they could be, like, the number 20 offense and, like, the number 16 defense, you know, which could bring them to, like, 35 wins. And that would comfortably get them past that over-under.
Yeah, I guess it all depends on Oladipo's comfort level in the system with the ball in his hands. Turner's jump. I know this is year three for him, and if he's healthy,
I also love Miles Turner. I mean, I think what a talent! What a talent! He is so good on both sides. He could be really freaking good.
He is ideal in today's NBA. So really quick switching gears. I have another over under that really stands out to me as easy money. And it is also in the Northwest Division. It is the Utah Jazz at 40.5.
Yes, that was my next one.
I am kind of surprised that I know they lost Gordon Hayward. That was arguably their best player. Some people think Rudy Gobert is their best or most important player last season. But, you know, they're really good, and they'll have continuity. They brought in some really smart players. So what are your thoughts there? Do you agree that they're almost a shoe-in for the over?
The only thing that gives me reservations is just health concerns. Mm-hmm. They've got guys who have injury histories, and I think that could pull them under, and I'm sure that contributes to that 40.5 number. You know, a couple of years ago, their over-under was 40.5 going into the year. Not this past year, but the year before that. Their over-under was 40.5 going into the year, and I thought it was a shoo-in. I was like, they're easily winning 40.5 games. That team is good. And I was, like, singing their praises all summer. I was like, this team is making the playoffs. I think I picked them to win, like, way over. I picked them to win, like, in the high 40s or something like that. Like, basically be the team that they were this past season. And I was like, this team is totally doing it. And that was the year they were just decimated by injuries. Like, everybody got hurt. Hood got hurt, and Burks got hurt. And, you know, they just – Favors got hurt, I think it was. And Gobert got hurt for 20 games or something like that. And everyone was hurt at different points. And they ended up losing, like, a heartbreaker, which they never should have lost – to the Clippers late in the year, because the Clippers rested everybody. Jamal Crawford ended up hitting a game-winning
three. I remember that game. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they ended up winning 40 instead of 40 instead of 41, and their over-under was 40.5. And just to add, you know, for people who, you know, maybe some people bet on them to win over 40.5 and to make the playoffs as well, that extra win to get them to 41 would have tied them. Forget about the tiebreaker. But would have tied them with Houston at 41. Houston ended up getting the 8th seed at 41 that year and getting swept by Golden State in the first round. So it was just awful all around. And that Clippers game, it wasn't the last game of the season. It was an April game, but it wasn't the last game of the season. But that was the one where it was like, okay, this isn't happening. A lot of it just had to do with the injuries. And if those injuries things come up, because they had injuries, they were so good last year and they were so talented and they won, what, 51 last year?
Mm-hmm. They did.
It could have been way more. I mean, they had a ton of injuries last year, too. I mean, some guys weren't there anymore. You know, George Hill got hurt. And they had injuries there last year, too. But, yeah, I'm with you. That defense is still a top 10 defense for sure, I think.
Top five.
Yeah, I mean, you still got Gobert. They lose Hill, but they bring in Rubio, who I think is a wonderful defensive player. He can guard point guards. He's long. He's feisty. He's good on the ball. Usually big, long guards aren't great at getting through screens because it's easier to body them up because just their length and their size, they're just bigger targets. But Rubio is good at it. I think he's a really, really good defensive player. He's actually a guy who gives Russell. I think he's one of the point guards because point guards usually don't guard Westbrook well. He's just on a Thunder-related note. I think he's one of the best point guards at guarding Westbrook in the league. I know Patrick Beverley always gets that credit as being the guy who's the best, but I think Ricky Rubio is really, really good at guarding Russell Westbrook too. So I think that didn't work out too well in that game in Boston though, or the game in OKC.
No, I attended the game in Boston. That was a dagger in my heart.
That game was ridiculous.
It was a great game.
That game was ridiculous. But yeah, I think Utah's winning 45 to 46. If they stay healthy, I don't see why they can't win like 47 games.
But no, I think they're a playoff team. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I think they're a playoff team. And you add like they've got youth too, like exciting youth that's athletic. Mitchell, who they got with the 13th pick.
I like
Dante
him.
Mitchell had a extremely good summer league, which take that for what it's worth. But I mean, he's clearly going to have a career in the NBA. Rubio, you know, I would probably say that George Hill, just because of his ability to space the floor, is still a little bit better. But you got basically a league average point guard there, starting point guard, and potentially better defensively, at least in terms of, you know, being able to stay on the floor, which was a problem for George Hill last season. And Dante Exum, who, like, has just been, like, I don't even know what his deal is, but I feel like he's still good, or can be good. So I like this team a lot, and I was really shocked to see them be dead last in that division.
What are your stayaways? Which ones do you look at and you're just like, I wouldn't touch that line with a 10-foot pole?
That's a really good question.
Should I give mine?
Yes, give yours.
Okay. I'm going to group my first one. I'm just going to group three of them together for my first one because the logic is kind of similar. Golden State, Houston, and San Antonio. So Golden State is 67.5. No team until last year had ever won 67 games 3 years in a row. Golden State did it. This year they'd have to win 67 games. In order to get this, they need 68 or more. They'd have to win 68 4 years in a row. That seems insane. It seems like it's never going to happen. This is also the most talented team ever assembled, so why in the world would you bet against them? So, I mean, last year they won 67 and Durant got hurt. What if Durant and Curry stay healthy this year? They could win 70. You know, so I just, logically, it doesn't make sense to bet on a team to win 67 plus for a fourth straight year. But logically, it also doesn't make sense to bet against a team this talented. So I wouldn't want to touch that 67.5. Like, there's kind of no line that would make sense for the Warriors, you know? Like, it's just, it's a weird thing. Houston, 55.5, kind of a similar thing to what I was talking about with OKC. I could see them getting off to the slow start, integrating Chris Paul, you know, getting him acclimated with James Harden, and then still being extraordinarily good and extremely dangerous going into the playoffs, but just with, like, a win number in the low 50s. I could also see, like, that team has the talent of a 60-win team. So I could just see them being a 60-win team easily, and I feel like those two are really tough. And with San Antonio, that roster is not even close to a 54.5 win roster. Like, it's not even close. But last year's roster, I went into the season saying, like, there's no way this team is going to win. Like, there's no way this team is going to be number one in defense for a second consecutive year. There's just no way. They're playing David Lee. They're playing Pau Gasol. There's just no way. And all of a sudden, they win 60 again, and they're number one in defense again just because, like, the Spurs do Spurs things. And intellectually, I can't see how the Spurs are going to win 54.5 games other than the Spurs do Spurs things. But that has happened for, like, 20 years in a row. So I'm just not going to want to bet against them, even though all the information is telling me, like, this team probably can't win 55.
So my thoughts are with the Warriors, I would probably, if I had to make a bet on these three teams, I would take the under with Golden State for, like, I don't believe that they'll take the regular season seriously this year. I mean, it's like, why would you? Why would you play KD?
Couldn't they not take the regular season seriously and still win 68 games?
They could, but, I mean, you've got the wear and tear of, like, Curry, and you said it earlier, like, Curry, Draymond, Clay, the guys who have been, Sean Livingston, Iguodala, who have been along for this ride for the whole time, like, their seasons have been extremely long the past few years, and it wouldn't surprise me if any of these guys suffered nicks and bruises along the way where they had to sit out a week or two, maybe even a month. And that really matters. And just looking at the Western Conference, yes, the Warriors are incredible, but, like, just about every other team in the West is also extremely dangerous on any given night. So 68 wins is a ton of wins, and I think that they could definitely do it. But if I had to bet, I would say the under. with regards to Houston, I would probably take the over. I think that this is going to be the best or second best offense in basketball. I'm not really – just when I look at the intelligence and the fact that Harden and Paul have been, you know, playing this summer, they played in Team USA together, I think they know each other's tendencies more than we're giving them credit for. They're both just such smart playmakers, arguably the two smartest, with including LeBron, two of the three smartest pick-and-roll playmakers in basketball. So I'm not really sure that there will be that much of an adjustment period. I think they'll be terrific. I really like the moves in the periphery that Daryl Morey made, and they're really good. They'll be good on both ends. And then with the Spurs, I mean, it's the Spurs, so I'm going over. Like, I think Kawhi's going to be
the
MVP this season.
That's exactly my point, though. Like, the logic is, like, it's the Spurs, so you're going over, which is perfectly sound logic because it's the Spurs and because Kawhi somehow gets better every single year and he's already one of the three best players in the NBA and he still will probably find some way to get better. Like, that's the logic, but, like, that's not a logic we would use for any other team, which is exactly why I say, like, I wouldn't feel comfortable making the bet. Like, that logic is sound, but it would just make me uncomfortable if I were... If I had something, if I had something running on that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, like, when I'm looking at teams that I would not touch, it's just teams with huge question marks, like the Clippers, 43.5. We don't know what the deal is with Blake Griffin. We don't know how the new pieces will fit in around him. Teodosic, Pat Beverly, Lou Williams. Like, I'm not certain. I mean, you used to be a Clippers fan. What are your thoughts on that team this season?
I think that's a good don't touch it one. Yeah. I mean, it depends on Blake's health. I think Blake is going to be great this year. But if he's not back until December, which is a possibility, then it may take time for them to really start to gel. Like, you may not see that offense gel at all. And I think they could be an above-average offensive team. But you may not see that offense really start to gel until January, and by then it may be too late, you know? Like, it's...
I'm with you, but I'm just thinking right now, why do the Clippers have a higher over-under than the Jazz? Is that literally just big market, small market?
Well, I think the first thing you have to... The Clippers don't operate like a big market team, though. They don't have fans. I bet you there are more Jazz fans than there are Clipper fans.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
I think probably the fact that they have a superstar in Blake probably entices more people to bet on the over for them. Because you have to keep in mind with this stuff, like, people think that Vegas lines are predictive. They're close to predictive, but they're not predictive. Their goal is to maximize the amount of people who are going to bet on both sides of the line. And that's how they said it. So I think probably Blake Griffin's existence on the Clippers and the fact that he's just a much bigger superstar than Rudy Gobert from a casual fan betting perspective probably would have something to do with that. I also think the Clippers are probably more talented. Like, you still have Blake, you still have DeAndre, who's in the same league. I think Gobert's a better player, but DeAndre's in the same league as Rudy Gobert. They're not going to be as good defensively, but I think they could be a strong offensive team still. Like, I think they could still be a really good offensive team once Blake is back and healthy. I think Blake's going to have an amazing year this year. Like, I think this is the year where people kind of start to remember, oh yeah, Blake Griffin is really, really good. Like, he was so great when he was able to run the offense in that like 18 game stretch when Chris Paul got hurt a few years ago, and he doesn't have the athleticism that he used to have. I think that's obvious. But he's also way more skilled. He shoots threes at a pretty decent rate now. Like, he shot at 30, like high 30s in the last, 25 games on three attempts a game. And really looks comfortable from all over the court there shooting threes now. And I think just being able to run the offense by himself, go coast to coast, bring the ball down on defensive rebounds and go, run it out of the high post. I think he's going to be really, really good if he can get back healthy this year. And I imagine that would contribute to it as well. I don't mind that Clippers number. I more just think that the Jazz number is low than the Clippers number is high.
Yeah, no, that's fair. You know, you brought up a really interesting thing. Like, we all look at and focus the teams that are adding, you know, superstar talent. And, you know, the Rockets adding Chris Paul, Thunder adding Paul George, Timberwolves adding Jimmy Butler. But, like, looking at the Clippers as an example and the pieces that are kind of still there, most notably Blake, like, that narrative right there is just as intriguing to me as how will Chris Paul fit in with the Rockets? How will Blake Griffin kind of pick up the pieces here in L.A. now that he's the lone guy? I think, you know, he has – if he has this monstrous season that you think he might have, like, he'll be probably in the MVP discussion given how many talented players are now on the same team and are kind of cannibalizing each other's votes, like –
If he plays enough games.
Yeah, he'll have to play probably like over 70 games, I would imagine. But he could do it. And if he's, you know, the same player he was during the 2015 playoffs again, which who knows if that's even possible, but if he is, like, watch out. That would be very, very fun.
People forget about Blake in the 2015 playoffs. He was the best player in the first two rounds of the 2015 playoffs.
He was the best player in the world. Like, full stop, probably, in that Spurs series going into, you know, what he did against the Rockets at first. He was phenomenal. It was ridiculous.
It was amazing. He was just throwing up triple-doubles everywhere. It was, what was it? He was like 25, 13, and 7 against the Spurs in that seven-game first-round series. Like, against San Antonio's defense, which was an incredible defense in one of the most entertaining and best played first round series that we've had in a long time in the NBA. Incredible series.
I was fortunate enough to attend every game in Los Angeles. It was a lot of fun. So another team, or just like, this isn't a stay away for me. This is more of a guaranteed team that I think we should be taking the over is the Miami Heat. They're 43.5. That seems, you know, about right. But when you kind of look at the pieces that they retained, how good they played down the stretch last season, just their culture, their core, their continuity, some of the players that they added, i.e. Kelly Olynyk, who I think he just makes teams better when he's on the floor. I really like the Heat, and I would say the over for them is almost a guarantee.
I get that. I feel a little bit differently. I get that people talk about the way they finished last year and they went 30-11 down the stretch. A lot of those pieces were still responsible for starting 11-30, though. And I don't know if you can count last year's season from Dion Waiters as the norm. Like, I don't know if Goran Dragic is going to be quite as efficient this year. I don't know. I agree with you. I like the Olynyk signing. I think he's going to help them. But I don't know if James Johnson's awesome improvement that he had last year is going to be the norm. Like, maybe he's going to be better than your average James Johnson season that we've gotten over the last 7 years, but maybe he's not going to be quite as good as he was last year, because last year was the best year of his career. Like, they had a lot of guys who had career years. And I'm not sure if that was them taking the next step or if it was just that a bunch of career years happened to coincide with each other. And if they just happened to coincide with each other, then maybe you do end up seeing another, like, 41-win team again, as opposed to, you know, all of those guys playing like they did in the second half of the season and this team ends up winning 50.
Yeah, I get that. I see what you're saying, and the fact that these guys were playing for contracts and now they're all kind of paid, that matters a little bit for some guys. But I also look at, you know, Justice Winslow. I think I'm pretty high on Justice Winslow. I know he can't shoot at all, but just he's, what, 21 years old, and this will basically be year two for him because he missed just about all of last season with a shoulder injury. And a serious wrist injury. So I don't know. I like this team. I think that they're really built to play a lot of intriguing lineups, particularly when Hassan Whiteside is not on the floor. I think they'll be really, really good. And then also just, like, you know, you factor in the rest of the conference and how shitty it is. And the Heat are not tanking, whereas a ton of teams in the East will be. So I just I like them a lot.
You got anything else?
Not really. I mean, at first glance, when I'm just looking at these numbers, a lot of them just make sense to me.
Yeah. How sad must it be for New Orleans to look at that and be like 39.5 and then think, like, yeah, that makes sense.
That totally, totally makes sense. And I would not bet the over.
No, I wouldn't bet the over either. And that's gotta be so sad for the few Pelicans fans who are out there. Just be like, like, if this was the run at it, and they're just 39.5, where is that in the West? I mean, it's certainly not a playoff team, but where does that end up being? I haven't gone through and seen where they are, but they got to be below 9.
That's not great. I'm looking at the, if you're 39, you would have finished 10th. Well, they won 34 last year. Denver won 40 and finished 9th. So, yeah, that's not great. Yeah, you know, the Grizzlies at 37.5, now that I'm looking at the Southwest Division, that, I get that, and I understand why it's so pessimistic, but I would probably bet the over there and be pretty confident.
Huh.
That's, you got that's, Mike Conley.
I like it. I like it. I'm into that.
Chandler Parsons' Instagram stories have him in the gym every day.
And Chandler Parsons can't be any worse than he was last year. If Chandler That's Parsons true. Contributes like a little bit for 10 games, he is better than he was last year.
Yeah,
maybe
they still
he wins
signed...
an extra game or two and you win 39.
Yeah, they still haven't signed Jamichael Green, have they?
They have not.
Okay, well, assuming that he's still on the team because they absolutely need him now that Zebo's gone. I like that bet. But
he's
yeah,
one of the 400 big men who are still unsigned.
Right. Yeah, I mean, everything else looks about right to me. I still can't get over the Celtics, though. And it pains me to say that I may put money on the under for my favorite team.
Well, you're going to have to do that. What do you got coming out? What do you got to plug?
I'm working on a profile of a player to be named later that I've been working on for a few weeks. And actually, last time I spoke to you on the phone, I was out in L.A. reporting it. So that's coming out first week in September. And then besides that, you know, just gearing up for the season. I'm excited. Should be a fun one.
Yeah. It certainly will be, and you can know, just because Locked On Thunder, I won't be here. Locked On Thunder is still going to be around. David and I know is hard at work at getting another host, and I'm sure he'll have a great job here. Like I say at the top, David just does an incredible job with this, and I'm sure whoever jumps on after me will end up doing an incredible job with this as well, because Locked On Network is just awesome, and it was a great experience doing stuff here. Are you washing your hands right now as I give a sentimental goodbye?
I'm cleaning out my coffee mug. I didn't think you would notice.
Did you give your Twitter handle?
I did not. It is Michael V. Pina. V as in... most valuable player. Okay, yeah. I was looking for the V in most valuable player.
MVP.
Yeah.
You are the MVP. And I'll still be around. I've got some stuff on the horizon, but you can follow me on Twitter at Fred Katz, and you can see what I got going on there, and you can still find my stuff, still find my work on normantranscript.com/sports/thunderroad, or you can find it on Twitter, or you can, you know, like Norman Transcript on Facebook and see that stuff there that ends up coming out. That is going to do it for today. That's going to do it for Locked On Thunder. So for the final time, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
Support for this podcast comes from NetSuite. NetSuite lets you run your business from your phone, so you can see what's going on with your company in real time. Go to netsuite.com/podcast to get your free guide and find out why NetSuite is the last business system you'll ever need.